Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. Today we have Ivan and Taras, who will be talking about D3, and I'm really excited. Taras is organizer of Ember Meetup, which is a really awesome, they have the Ember Show, which is a monthly online conference, plus GemConf, and he also does a lot of really awesome mentoring and training and consulting, etc., through Ember Sherpa. So you can find him at Ember Sherpa on Twitter. And Ivan is the co-founder of Flood.io. Do you call it Flood, Ivan, or Flood.io?
I think we're still A/B testing names on that one. I call it Flood, but everyone else calls it Flood.io.
Okay. Well, either way, you guys know where to find him. And can you tell us a little bit about what Flood does?
So basically, we're a self-service load testing platform where you can upload a test plan for either JMeter or Gatling or Capybara, and we'll distribute that over as many servers as you need in any AWS region around the world to basically generate as much load as you need against your app, your API, or your website, and then we'll collect all those results in real time and help you scale your platform.
Cool, and I've heard you've been telling me some really awesome stories about your clients and sort of the scale you guys are reaching. So it's you guys should totally all check it out. And you can find Ivan at iVanderbilt on Twitter. So I will let you guys start with this awesome D3 conversation. I know you guys have been collaborating and working on very similar projects and maybe working on some projects together.
Yeah. Taras, do you want to start by telling us a bit about your D3 helpers stuff you've been working on? Because I think we last chatted about that like a month ago. How's that coming along?
Yeah, sure. It's been going well. We have so Zach from Locus Energy, who I've been working with. He did a lot of the writing of the actual code, and I directed him as he was creating this library. So he's working on moving towards. So he put up a demo site. He's in the process of preparing it for open source. There is a lot of it consists of two libraries. It's a D3 helpers Ember D3 helpers library, which is the mechanism that powers the Ember Sparkles library, which is the collection of implementations of Ember D3 helpers that aims to provide kind of common graphs that people might want to use and to visualize data on their application. So, yeah, that's what these libraries do. And last time we chatted, I don't know when did we stop last time? Like, what do you know about what we're working on?
I think last time we stopped with promising to have another chat within a month, but I think it was more a month ago. I'm trying to think where Zach got to with that, but just like a bit of a background for all the listeners, I suppose. The reason this all kind of came about was that at EmberConf, I gave a talk about pushing forward the kind of graphing ecosystem in Ember, and I guess laid out a lot of reasons for not using existing charting libraries, or existing JavaScript charting libraries with Ember. And that really came down to like wanting more expressiveness over, say, the efficiency of just being able to throw a library in there. So we've been kind of collaborating on pushing forward ways that may or may not work. And where Taras got to, I think where we were talking last month, was that they've pretty much put together, as I understand it, helpers for almost all of the basic D3 APIs. So you can kind of pipe them together inside of handlebars, inside of your template, in, I guess, a rather verbose way. To basically represent any graph that is possible with D3. So how's that coming along?
It's interesting. I think one of the things, so I guess I want to give a little bit of background as well, just to add some context to what Ivan, you mentioned about where we started, because I think your talk at EmberConf was really important from the perspective of, you know, we need to start speaking, we need to start talking and thinking about this, because a lot of people in the Ember community know that that graphing is one of the areas that we haven't had a good solution to date, and everyone kind of, you know, anyone who has experience with that, they kind of like, yeah, you know, this is important, but we don't really know how to properly address this, and it's been kind of punted on for a long time, and then so your talk is like kind of a call to action, almost like, you know, we need to start to understand how these things work and actually start to, you know, start to put them in action. And we started working on our library a couple of months before seeing your talk, and it was like, it was great to see that you know, there's this kind of alignment that's happening amongst people in our community that yeah, we need to find a solution to this. So that's that's a bit more background. In terms of how it's going, it's interesting because what we're finding is that some of the things that we're doing in this library, it's pushing the envelopes in terms of how we think about building or writing code in Ember applications. And so a lot of things that we're stumbling into are things that, like, it's not really clear, you know, because the best practices around this haven't been defined yet, right? We're kind of experimenting
totally
with what, yeah, right? So because it's like this idea, for those who are not familiar with Ember D3 helpers, and I would assume it's most everybody who's listening to this podcast, but this library uses helpers a lot. So there's probably more helpers in one template for composing a D3 graph than you probably would have used possibly in like entire section of an app. So it's quite different. Ivan, what was it like for you when you first saw it? I mean, it's a different approach than what you took with Maximum Plaid.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess to outline to the listeners a little bit, there's two ways you can approach putting together, applying D3 to Ember components within an Ember app and using handlebars for laying that out. My initial approach was to kind of put all of the, you know, computing of scales and represent and generation of path data and so forth within the component itself as just JavaScript. But the problem with this is that you're kind of putting it in a closed box and then applying it into your template. So after that point, you can only customize it to the same degree you can with a regular sharding library by, you know, just updating particular attributes, and you can kind of end up with this situation where one component ends up doing way more things than it really needs to. Whereas Terrasse's approach takes the opposite end of that, whereas there's nothing within the component itself and it's just using helpers, and a helper function in Ember is literally just a pure function. So it takes inputs and spits out, you know, whatever it's designed to do. And surprisingly, I actually thought that that Handlebars is really, really efficient with this, and I think it's only going to get even better with Glimmer 2. So that's actually changed the way that I've been addressing this problem in our own app and in the library that I'm working on called Maximum Plaid, which, while it's got a pretty funny name, I'm actually starting to like Terrasse's approach a lot more than the one we've been taking, because it kind of feels like we're falling back into the original trap of just making a charting library with predefined components. At least it was, until we started applying more and more helpers into the equation. And I've actually been using your D3 helpers library in a branch I've got locally to kind of make that a little bit more expressive, and applying a lot of the problems that we're coming across day to day within our own product to graphing problems that we want to be able to represent within that library without, you know, subclassing a component and making it specific for that particular role.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's exciting to see that the ideas that Ember community has laid out and the Ember core team has been pushing forward with the sub expressions in HTML bars and these new patterns, they seem to scale really well for different problems, kind of unexpected places to address with these techniques. But I think I want to share something that's really that got me really excited. There was at the last Global Ember Meetup, the Ember Show, and we had Edward Faulkner on there, and he was talking about the improvements that he made recently to Liquidfier. And what's really exciting about this work that's happening with helpers is that we can actually can leverage each other's solutions. So that, you know, talking about composability, right? So the promise of composability is that we can actually we can have small solutions to common problems, and then use these compose these solutions and compose code into, you know, the implementation that's appropriate for our use case. But it also means that, you know, when we address a problem like an atomic level, then we can use this atomic solution for other purposes. So a really good example of this is Edward Faulkner's library that he recently wrote. It's called Ember Ignore Children Helper, I think, something like that. But it's essentially what it does is a helper that that all it does is it filters out events that were triggered by a child of a node. It's a little abstract because I only saw it last weekend, so you know I'm still not 100% on it. But I could already see that a solution like this would allow us to, like, we could use something like that to filter out events on nodes in a graph, for example. Because you can then say, like, if this thing is not, if it's not hitting the right DOM element, then don't propagate this action through the rest of the chart. So, but this solution that he implemented is actually for a problem that he was trying to solve with using Liquidfier with modals, right? So we're implementing a more composable modal interface or modal components. So it's really interesting that we're able to take a solution that was created for something completely different and apply it for graphing. I think that's really exciting.
That's really interesting, because that's obviously, if you're building interaction within charts, composing the event handling within the chart in a reusable, a generalizable way is almost as hard a problem to solve as figuring out how to make any of the changes you make in your graph generalizable. Something I was going to mention, which I guess we're still trying to find a neat way of doing, but so one of the problems with running a load testing service is that it's essentially a giant distributed system as we spin up hundreds upon hundreds of servers and then collect results from them and then kind of compute the mean of certain attributes and then plot them in real time on a graph. But the problem is we don't have any way of synchronizing when those servers report in. So some of that data that we're plotting could actually change. You know, it could be that it's, you know, 30 or 60 seconds out of date, or 30 to 60 seconds until we get those updates come in. So as a real world problem of figuring out how to display this was, we're thinking, well, maybe we just don't show, we just chop off data until like 60 seconds, because we're pretty sure that things are going to come in within about 60 seconds. But we might come up with a scenario where waiting for 60 seconds for data to come in for a user kind of gives them a pretty poor experience, because they might not know that their test is running, for example. So we'd at very least like to be able to show something, especially if we've got aggregate metrics that we're already showing next to this chart. So I guess as a design level, I decided to display the last 60 seconds as dots and everything after that as a solid line. But then it comes down to the problem of, well, we've got this line component. Should I subclass this as and call it like slightly uncertain line component or something like this, which has the logic in it to determine, displaying the last 60 seconds as dots and so forth, and working out how long the line is and all of that, and what the path dash array is for SVG. But a more elegant solution that I think might work is actually coming up with a bunch of helpers that we can just apply to the dash array attribute on that line, and just have a generic line component which just does exactly one thing and spits out, you know, a path element with path data applied to it. And then that dash array can be any number of components chained together which decide what that ends up being. which at the end of the day is just a string with a bunch of coordinates in it. So problems like this, I guess on the day-to-day, like really sort of changing the direction of how we design these libraries. What sort of problems are you sort of coming across, Taras?
I think the biggest challenge that there are a few challenges that we're encountering right now that are kind of imminent for me, because Zach is working on we're adding some additional graphs, we're cleaning up the implementation, but there's a few things that don't sit well with me, and I'd like to address them. And so things like there's a few things that are not clear. So one thing is not clear is, like, when do you create a helper and when do you compose a helper, right? Or compose helpers. Like, that separation is not really clear to me yet. Like, I don't have a conceptual clarity around when to determine when you should, compose a helper, which can actually get pretty complex, versus when you should just go ahead and create another helper that is going to do a bunch of things in it. A good example of this is the D3 join helper that we added, which doesn't exist in D3, but we added that because it makes it a lot easier to join data. So there's a kind of a high level concept in D3 of joining data, and you would implement it in a particular way when you're writing the D3 graph. Like, you'd have you'd basically chain the enter and exit calls onto your D3 selection. But so that's a common pattern that's applied in D3 graphs. When we went to apply it in Glimmer and Handlebars, what we end up doing is creating a D3 join helper, which is essentially kind of like embodiment of this concept of joining data into one helper, and then you're passing into it the enter and exit and join callbacks, or exit, enter, and update callbacks. So that's an example of, like, I don't know, Ivan, if you have, what are your thoughts on this? Like, when should we compose helpers, as in, like, when should we use a few helpers that return functions and then put them together into, like, one pipe? Or should we just, when should we just go ahead and create a new helper that does that kind of one particular thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I guess at the end of the day, that comes down to how do we design an API that is easy to remember how to use, so that our end users who end up adopting these libraries don't have to continually refer to documentation and figure out whether or not you can chain a bunch of helpers together, or whether or not it's expecting to just create itself as a function. I was actually wondering, has any sort of natural patterns kind of emerged for you guys with that, or is there still, I'm guessing from the from your own app, do you think that there's any patterns that are emerging from the way the helpers directory is laid out or anything like that?
I think the most innovative thing that we've done with the helper layout so far is just using directory structure. So your helper would look like, directory name / helper. So, like, in a project, like something that comes to mind, like a document section, if we have helpers, in the absence of using engines and being able to, or components that you can register close to the helpers you can register with a component, what we've been doing is putting helpers inside of a directory in a helpers directory. And so then when you're referencing those helpers, they're kind of namespaced. And so I think that's from a naming perspective, that might be the most innovative thing that we've done. Have you come across that kind of namespacing mechanics, or have you used that in your app?
Yeah, I think we've in our own production app, our app's got nearly 150 components in it now, so it's getting a bit hairy. But a while ago, we adopted the pod directory structure for components, so that sort of cleaned things up a little bit. But we've started to go a little bit more deep with that now for helpers and everything else, which is kind of nice. But the interesting thing, I think, for you guys is that you're more or less with D3 helpers mirroring the D3 API, so a lot of that is already a defined structure, because, in D3 version 4, a lot of that's already been broken out into particular libraries. Are you adopting the naming conventions of D3 there, or are you kind of coming up with helpers that are more specific to the problem that you're solving at the time?
I think that we, I think it would be best if we stayed as close to G3 as possible. That was part of the initial design thinking, because G3 is such a, it's a mature library, being at version 4, and there's so many amazing resources around D3. Basically, any graph that you want to create, you can go and find an example of that graph, which is to me was part of the reason why I was thinking that we should make it possible to look at these examples and be able to create that graph in a template, as opposed to coming up with our own way of doing it, because I just think that I wanted to leverage that wealth of resources. So ultimately, our goal is to keep things as close to G3 as possible, and making it very Ember friendly, but at the same time, looking at what are the ergonomics of using this library and how can we make it actually easy for people to create these graphs. And that D3 join helper, which doesn't exist in D3 libraries, but that we added, I think, is a good example of that.
Yeah, I think the ergonomics is a really important aspect to take into account when designing a charting library, because, I mean, essentially it's a very complex domain to model. And D3, for a start, is notoriously a very terse syntax, and has been known to be a very difficult to learn if you're just getting started to the concepts of how D3 selections work and so forth. Which actually, kind of when I started going down the path of designing a more useful, a better charting experience for Ember, was that I wanted to make it really easy to use. So I went searching for, other ways that this has been solved before. And one of the things I came across was the book, The Grammar of Graphics, which was originally published in the early 90s, but I think it's still very applicable today. But it basically outlays its own specification for how to express almost any data visualization by breaking it down into a number of different layers, which I guess essentially could be thought of as, you've got data, you're going to make some transformations to this data, and then you're going to figure out a way of scaling your data source to your presentation source, which in this case is a screen, and then scaling each of the elements that you're going to lay out that data with. So that was the angle of attack, I suppose, that I was taking with Maximum Plaid originally. I think at this point, it actually feels like we're going more towards, like, we're kind of normalizing in the middle, because I'm creating more and more components which wrap D3 more directly. More and more helpers which wrap D3 more directly. But as well as you've got Ember Sparkles, which is basically taking the terse API of D3 and the verbose API of D3 helpers, and creating a more ergonomic and more reusable set of components, which I guess can be thrown into other people's apps more easily. And I think that's probably an area where I'm going to say the case of doing it all in components for creating online components, so forth, at some point soon, I think I'm just going to have to drop it and go with D3 helpers, because I really like that approach and it leads towards being a lot more flexible in the future. Because I guess, like I've said earlier, I don't want to fall down the path of just creating a bunch more components which are very hard to customize.
One thing that just occurred to me, tell me what you think about this, but one of the things that is, like, helpers are not supposed to have side effects, but unfortunately our helpers do have side effects, because what we're essentially doing with D3 helpers is we are creating a function that is, we're chaining together a bunch of operations, when those operations run, they're transforming a selection of DOM elements, which are rendered by D3. And at the top level, we have this, I created this helper called shh, and what it does is it basically absorbs the output from the topmost helper. So essentially, you're not rendering the return value, which I think is something like either a DOM element or DOM element as a like a JSON object. So it's actually or it's an object or it's a function. I don't remember exactly what it's spitting out, but the topmost helper is actually spitting something out to the browser. But in addition to that, there's also a side effect of actually DOM being manipulated, which I think is not like it's not pure. And it would be. I wonder if there would be, if there is room with an Amber framework to allow us to return a value which is possibly like a DOM tree, and then have that DOM tree rendered, something of that nature. I don't know how that fits in to the Amber framework leadership or evolution.
You know, I actually. That sounds like a good use case for Glimmer components, as my understanding of it goes.
Yeah, maybe when 2.7 lands, there's going to be something that we'll be able to use to make this better.
Yeah, because I think you're right. With helpers at the end of the day are just designed to return a value that gets passed to back to handlebars for it to render within the template and do what its job is. But if you're loading up D3, which is in the background making a selection against the DOM. It feels like a bit of a dirty solution to it. But it's a much more lightweight solution than using components. And I guess in a lot of ways, helpers are obviously a lot more flexible than this, than components would be.
Yeah, it's so the win really with helpers is that you get free binding. Right, so your chart is automatically is by default reactive or responsive to whatever input you pass into it, which is really the biggest challenge building your D3 graph in JavaScript is that you then need to figure out how you're going to apply, like, for every attribute you need to create a binding that is going to and then apply that binding onto the D3 graph. Or D3 functions. So what we're doing with helpers is essentially kind of bystepping that. So instead of doing all the configuration in JavaScript, we're sprinkling it over or breaking it up over a bunch of helpers. But yeah, so how do you keep that kind of free binding mechanism that you get, and also actually make it pure in that the helpers don't have a side effect?
That's a really interesting point. I'm actually curious, given that a lot of the D3 APIs actually store values on the DOM elements themselves, for reference, especially the join helper, for example. Have you had any trouble working around that, or has that caused any issues using helpers?
We haven't had so far issues with that, because we're actually allowing D3 to completely apply all the transformations to the actual DOM elements that it renders. So we don't interact with them directly. So it's just like spitting out DOM elements, and when changes happen, it makes a new selection, builds up what needs to be applied, and applies it onto those same DOM elements. So we don't actually interact with the original DOM elements.
Right, I see what you're saying. That's a bit of a challenge, I guess, that we've had with components, because we're kind of constantly in a battle between when Ember's going to render something, which it comes down to the life cycle of the component, and when we can apply our D3 transformations to that. So it's kind of like two different rendering engines competing with each other, which makes your helper strategy a lot more appealing, because that's all kind of deferred to when Handlebars decides to do its thing.
In theory, there's also one added benefit that D3 Glimmer rendering engine doesn't make promises about whether or not the function is going to be called. So it doesn't call a function for every value change. It just promises that it's going to give you the last value. Which for graphs is actually pretty great, because that just means that if you're dragging a scroller through a page and you're doing it really quickly, in theory it might not actually apply every value that along the way. It will just apply them at some interval, and what you will get at the end is always going to be the last value that came in.
So that's a really attractive approach because, I mean, that's kind of like you're getting throttling for free there, which has been one of the problems we've had to solve using, you know, Ember concurrency to sort of throttle the data flow through our app between different charts. Because in a lot of cases, you can end up with some very, very sluggish interfaces if you're trying to render every single change, which is essentially the case when you're forcing out through a component.
We want to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. For all of you Ember developers and Ember curious people out there, GemConf, the global Ember meetup conference, is coming to the Research Triangle in North Carolina from August 12th to August 16th. Join us for a day of talks led by Ember Sherpa and 2 days of training hosted by Ember Weekend. To RSVP, go to www.embermeetup.com/GemConf. That's www.embermeetup.com/GEMCONF. And now let's go back to our conversation with Ivan.
Speaking of which, as far as interaction goes, how have you found implementing interactions with helpers? Is that something you've attacked so far?
When we started in the beginning, that was one of the things that we wanted to make sure that, like, kind of right off the bat, that we could see what that felt like. And we found that it was quite effortless. So we delayed it because at this point we didn't really need to. We didn't have a lot of need for it. But I think it should be as simple as. And I look forward to having somebody bring a use case where this we could actually apply these ideas. But it should be as simple as just having a D3 on helper, which is going to receive a callback, and then a callback can be a pipe of actions that are going to be triggered when the on helper when the action callback is called. So in theory, it should be pretty straightforward, and we've experimented with it early on, and it seemed to have just worked exactly as expected. But you know, if it's something that the first chance that we get to anybody, who, you know, anyone who wants to start playing with that, like, we're more than happy to support them in adding that helper and adding that kind of experience to this library.
Yeah, it's probably actually a good time to say if anyone out there is interested in trying this out, I think we'd both definitely like to hear your feedback and see what kind of comes naturally as far as implementing interactions and any other types of charts and so forth.
Yeah, I think between Zach, you, Spencer, and myself, I think we have a decent. Like, there's enough of us, and also we have good understanding of these things. So if there are people who are interested in contributing to this and learning about this and would like my support in doing so, I'll be more than happy to support them. But I think there's enough of us that we can actually spread that over a group. So anyone who's interested in making D3 in Ember awesome, you know, help us.
totally.
Yeah, I think one of the things that one area that we, I guess I want to mention a few things. There's one thing that we still need to address is the data data formatting part, because I think and I think this is not even a this is not even necessarily a an Ember a D3 Ember D3 helper problem. I think it's just a general problem. We don't have a way of formatting data, a generic way of formatting data.
That's a good point, actually. I'm curious, with the D3 apps that you're working on, how are you getting the data into your app? I assume that you're not using Ember data.
So we do have, I know that a few apps that Zach is working on at Locus Energy, they're pulling data using like Ember concurrency, and I think they're just feeding it straight into the values, into the property where the value, you know, that's bound to the graph. But that's one use case. In most scenarios, one of the reasons why we're all doing kind of, I think, what we're doing is because we don't want to work with high charts, right?
Right.
As
right.
part of the so, but one of the things that's been traditionally been really difficult with high charts, and I think with most graphing libraries, is making sure that your data is prepared for the graph. That's actually a really big step, I think that's one area that we haven't almost, like, we haven't put a lot of effort into generalizing or creating a general solution for it, and everybody kind of ends up writing really complex code for doing transformations. And if there is something out there that we could use, it'd be really great.
Yeah, actually, you've just reminded me of one of the reasons we didn't end up using high charts in the early days was exactly that, was that we found that we had to prepare our data for the chart at a very early stage from when we received it, but there was a lot of places within our application that we would need a different transformation of that data in a much more raw state. So we found that we're kind of passing through different transformations of it to different routes and so forth, which eventually led to us creating a kind of in lightweight in-memory time series database. I guess because all of our stuff is time series, but essentially we needed a solution that was similar to Ember Data, where we could pull data in, transform it, and compute aggregate metrics on top of that, but as well as be able to spit out the raw values and timestamps and so forth and feed them directly into a graph when we needed them, which was kind of become an interesting lesson in of itself, because we do a lot of those transformations that kind of within our controls and so forth, but since working on charts and realizing the power of helpers, I've discovered that a lot of these could just be done with various helpers. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what other options is out there for a more natural way of transferring data. I know that D3 actually has a lot of functions built in for data transformation to kind of go from a very raw source to something that can be represented in a chart. But a lot of those we haven't been able to find that would apply specifically to what we're doing. So maybe it's a case of like some of those could be extended to more of a general use case for what we're doing within Ember.
Yeah, I think there are two parts to it. So I think there's two supporting initiatives. I think one thing that's happening is that increasingly components that I like to use have an object like an ES6 class that represents the state that the Ember component is actually just representing, right? So there's this idea that the state that we were actually working with is not necessarily the same thing as the Ember component that we are rendering. So, and I think this idea, same idea, I think it goes. It's similar to what you, it sounds like. It's similar to what you described with this time series data store, which is that even though you're representing this data with Ember with the components, but you still have this kind of in-memory representation of that data, which isn't necessarily, or doesn't necessarily need to be tied directly to your component. So any work that we do, I think this in this area is going to be, I think it's going to have kind of a long life. It's something that we're going to be applying in our apps going forward.
Do you have any high level ideas in mind of what that might look like?
Well, there are a few things that we're working on. So one thing, do you remember the talk that Charles Lowell gave at EmberConf about immutable UIs?
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So he did a follow-up talk to that at the last GemConf. It's really interesting because I talked to Charles and I asked him, like, Charles, can you got us all interested in this immutable UI stuff at GemConf, but you got us to a point where we were like, oh, let's see some code. And we didn't actually see any code. So this talk that Charles gave is actually, expressing some of the ideas of how we might do immutable, using immutability in building our user experiences. But further to that, And so actually that video, I just published that those videos yesterday. We're going to be tweeting them out shortly. And Ivan, I would highly recommend this. It's a really great video.
Yeah, totally. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to it. But one of the things that Charles and I have been working on since is a library called Microstates. And it's still quite early to talk about it. But the idea is that we want to give... We want to create a way to do to work with immutable data structures that is both liberal in the sense that you can create, you can represent any kind of data structure, or you know, most of the data structures that we want to use, but at the same time it's prescribed, so you don't so that you have a convention for handling for transforming that state, right? And so in doing that ergonomically, and I think that's this particular library or these ideas, I think, is what we need to do to make it easier for us to work with a mutable state. So I'm really excited about, you know, where that might take us. So yeah, that's that. The most of the ideas that we have are actually right now are going into this library.
Yeah, interesting. That was. With regards to immutable data in Ember, that's something that I'm particularly interested in seeing where it goes, because that was essentially the pattern that we chose for propagating data within our UI, essentially to avoid the situation of not being 100% certain about what data we were showing in particular places. So essentially we receive it in one place and we force that down through each route, filter it and whatnot as we need to, but if there's a new update that comes in, it literally just replaces the entire thing, so that we know that nothing along the way is, you know, half semi-complete or a merged value of something else as it could be if we were trying to update things at different stages and so forth, which I think adapts really nicely to the data down actions out pattern in Ember, which is becoming a lot more solidified these days.
So it's this the idea of having an object that has properties, and then how do you make sure that? So I think one strategy that we had was like using Ember set, right? So an Ember set is a strategy of making sure that if you update a property on an object that's bound to the template, Ember set will ensure that the observers fire. But what happens when you're interacting with much more complex data like much more complex objects, and you also want to be able to transform them, and what are the APIs that you expose to do that? Because you know, Ember set is not enough, because if you're going to be working with an array, then you have to like manually manipulate that array, create a new array, and then set that array, and so there's a lot of these. When you start thinking about actually using these mutable structures, a lot of what we have right now is not really like it's kind of scratches the surface. So it's definitely an interesting topic, and I'm hoping that that this is something that we're going to be exploring further over the next couple of years as Ember evolves.
Yeah, definitely. It's very exciting. Definitely very exciting what we have coming forward. Which kind of I think. Is a good place to probably leave it for today, actually. Something we can hopefully have a little bit more to progress on next time.
Yeah, sounds great.
Well, thank you so much, guys. It's really awesome to sort of hear about a bunch of different projects coming together, and it's always nice to hear about how different teams are collaborating, or different people in the open source community are collaborating. Kind of reminds me of what happened with Luke's was it Ember CLI deploy, sort of like all the projects came together. So
yeah, that was actually definitely something that I was hoping would kind of happen in this instance, because before Luke put that together, that was definitely an uncharted territory as far as deployment goes in Ember, and now it's a very, very well told story.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of really cool stuff happening with my girlfriend Ishigal in Angular 2 and D3, so I'll be listening to one of her presentations next week. So if anything exciting pops up and I see anything that you guys can potentially collaborate on, or I'm happy to put you guys in touch and see if there's any crossover, but who knows?
That could be good, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Well, everybody listening, again, thanks for listening to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. You can find Ivan at iVanderbil on Twitter and Taras at Ember Sherpa on Twitter. And we'll see you at the next one.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Tracy.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet.